This is another damn podcast about digital asset management. I'm Henrik DeGior. Today I'm speaking with Jim Sipple. Jim, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Jim, how are you involved with digital asset management?
The way I got involved with digital asset management, I currently work at Willow Creek Community Church in the Chicagoland area. And we're a very large church. We're one of the largest churches in the country. And my role here is managing and directing the post-production and field production in video. So I don't do the live production of video or for services. I actually am in the content creation side. And when digital asset management came to Willow Creek about 4 years ago, it was through our IT department that was trying to resolve a problem that they were having with a lot of people using, and you may have talked about this on previous shows, having their own desktop DAMs. So meaning that everybody was storing content that they were creating on their own laptops, their own desktops, their own server folders. Our IT department realized that they were having a problem of they were running out of space, they were having to purchase more server spaces, drives, and maintenance, and all that goes along with that cost. When they did their own internal audit, they realized that video was probably the biggest culprit in absorbing all that storage and space. And so they approached us saying, we're going to purchase a digital asset management system, and this is going to solve all your problems, and start putting everything on there, and don't put it on the network at all, because you're killing us every time you transfer a video and you slow down the network and storage and so on and so forth. So we're all like, okay, what's a DAM and why do we have to use this? Why do we like this? So after the first year and a half of implementation, and I use that term loosely because it was implemented but nobody was using it, out of frustration they came to me and said, Jim, you seem to be a little more knowledgeable than most on what digital asset management is, and your department is the one who's using the most amount of IT services, so guess what? You're going to manage this, and good luck with that. So with very little training or any kind of orientation, I wound up having to be the guy to learn how to do digital asset management. And we've thrown this around before. I became an accidental DAM manager because I had no previous experience. So it's been quite a learning curve. And so getting involved with it is first and foremost, I had to understand what our business was, doing video and doing video within a church. And then as it expanded out, I had to learn what other ministries were doing with media in general and how they were using it within the church. Unlike any other, or just like any other business, our realization is we're using a lot of digital media, and that all needs to get managed, and especially when you're trying to locate things and pictures, or whether it's pictures, video images, stock images, music. A lot of people never really had to think about how am I storing this and how do I find it and how do others find it. So this is how I got involved with it. It's not that I was looking for it. It's just kind of like I didn't sit down fast enough.
And why does a community church group use digital asset management?
Again, just like other businesses, we have a lot of media content. We produce hundreds of hours of video. We have hundreds of, not thousands of hours of live church services with across over 50 ministries throughout our organization. So not all ministries have a live service, but they'll request or create content that's either going to go into a teaching class or they'll use it on the internet, or they will use it in the service itself. So all of these, as with the rest of society, become more and more media savvy, more digital savvy, and in creating that content, it all needs to go someplace, obviously. You know, when you look at the history of the church, they've been managing content for thousands of years, you know, from Dead Sea Scrolls to keeping Bibles, printing Bibles in a Gutenberg press and trying to distribute that. So it's a natural phase for the church to go from analog and physical asset management to digital asset management, because our asset is the message that we have in the church, and that's number one. And then everything we create around it to support preaching that message naturally fits. And so, you know, we need to store that and be smart about it and steward our resources and our money well by being able to retrieve that information, be able to make it usable for other people. So we may create a great video for a service, and then one of our youth ministries want to use it, and they want to use, but they don't want to use all of it because they want to create it for their age group. So they may want to change some components within that video. Like maybe they want to take the music out that we use and put some better music in from their perspective. And so that's an asset that needs to go into that piece of content. So, or they want to use graphics, and maybe the graphics for the old people church is not cool enough for their service, so they can create their own graphics and insert that into the core of that content. It's really great to be able to have that ability to be able to go into a centralized system, find those different kinds of assets that you can use to either make a derivative of the original piece and make it work for your specific ministry or business group, and then be able to take those assets that you create within your own group and put that in a centralized location that other people can grab it and use it for theirs. So it also helps for all continuity throughout the different medias too. So if we're using something live in a service and then we decide we want to put it up on the internet or we want to use it in other kind of distribution through publishing or whatever, it's like everybody can go to that one place and grab that specific asset that's important to that brand or whatever they're trying to do and be able to incorporate that into the piece so that there's continuity throughout the different medias that it may be in.
And Jim, what advice would you like to give to DAM professionals and people aspiring to become DAM professionals?
Well, for those that are in the predicament that I was in where it's just kind of you're chosen to be the DAM manager, I think one of the things that the learning that I've come away with this is understanding. It really forces you to sit down and think about what do you do just within your own group? What do you do? Why are you doing it? And what are you trying to do with it? And for me, it was a very interesting exercise to go through to think about this is where we start, this is where we end, and here's everything that's involved in that process. Now, some organizations are probably more thoughtful than we've been, but it really helped identify a lot of things in terms of what happens to our videos, what are all the elements that are going into that video, and then what happens to the video afterwards, and who needs it, and what do they want to do with it. So just going through that alone really helps to identify, I think, helps identify what you need in a digital asset management system, and what are the different components do you need? Do you need it to do a lot of different transcoding within itself, or do you have to buy an add-on or a bolt-on? Do you need a document management to go along with that, and how does it tie back to your specific digital assets? And just all these things I never thought about when I was creating video, because we would just think about what's our script, how are we shooting it, and it goes in the tape library until somebody asks for a copy of it. I mean, that's how I thought about it most of the time, and did it succeed in the message. The next thing that I learned through all this is I had to build, well, it was twofold. I had to do a sales, be a salesman and through this whole thing to get people to buy into why would they want to take their work and put it into this centralized storage system or repository and instead of keeping it on their desktop where they can go into their folder, their My Docs and pull it up, or they can go into their thumb drives or external hard drives and pull up that content or asset immediately and be able to use it. Mm-hmm. So trying to cast that vision for, well, you can add more value. I mean, the whole point of an asset is to have value to it. So the more value you, the more you make it accessible to others for use, the more value it creates. It's kind of like what Kevin Kelly talked about in one of his books from Wired, where it's, the fax machine by itself has no value, but the more fax machines there are in the world, the more value there is. Now, obviously, that dates us because people probably don't use fax. But same with an asset, if you think about that. And so with the sales, there also has to be trust because, again, if they're able to look at a tape on their shelf or look at a hard drive on their shelf, there's a feeling like, okay, I have control over this. And I know where it is. Where it goes into a central repository, it's like you don't see it. So if people are going to put it in there, they want to be able to get it back out like they do with their desktop DAM. Because they can't see that asset and they're putting it in that repository, they got to have that trust that they can find it quickly. Most people will browse, so they want to click through however your repository interface is set up, whether it's a folder collection or it's little widgets, that they can get to it quickly just browsing. Or if you have the metadata, which is like learning about what is metadata, what is taxonomy, how do I, but it's offered to search purposes, that they can put in keywords and be able to find again what they're looking for quickly, and have confidence that it's there, or they have confidence that whatever search they create, it's going to return to them quality assets. Because again, you can use really broad strokes on metadata, and you can return 100 assets or on a search that really are not relevant to what you're looking for, or you can design metadata that or descriptions of that asset in a way that's going to return like 10 to 20 high quality assets where it's right there on the first page. You don't have to go through 20 pages to find what you're looking for. So just learning how to do that, what's metadata, what makes quality metadata, what's taxonomy, how am I structuring all of this stuff. This is all stuff I wish I would have known when this was put on me. And fortunately, through this community and yourself, you know, a lot of people out there that were blazing a trail before me are very helpful in learning that structure. And so I think the third component is learning, you know, networking with others. You realize, hey, I'm not the only one that's trying to figure this out. There's others. And just learning from each other. And that's been a huge help to me, is like being a part of various digital asset conferences, whether it's LinkedIn groups or another damn podcast or another damn blog, I mean, and other resources that are out there. It's just great to be able to know you can go to, you meet people and you learn where this all is, and you don't have to build this all by yourself. So yeah, networking is the third and really important component too. I mean, there's a whole bunch of other things, but those are probably my top three. And as far as aspiring, don't know if I have too much advice for aspiring other than the same thing.
Great. Well, thanks, Jim.
You're welcome.
For more on digital asset management, log on to anotherdamblog.com. Thanks again.